Hello, this is Lois Pausch reading the Vermilion County News for Friday, April the 28th, 2017. And the first article has the headline, 25-year-old man killed in shooting, three taken into custody following incident. Dateline Danville. A 25-year-old Danville man died Thursday afternoon after he was shot during a dispute on the city's east side. Director of Public Safety, Larry Thomason, said in a press release, city officers responded to the 1600 block of East Fairchild Street on a report of a person being shot at 12:45 p.m. The initial investigation has determined that the victim and other persons were involved in an argument that resulted with a minor traffic incident, Thomason said in the release. At some point in the disagreement, the victim, a 25-year-old male, was shot. That individual, a Danville resident, was pronounced dead at about 2 p.m. Shortly after the shooting took place, police attempted to stop a vehicle near Voorhees and Jackson Streets about 1 p.m., Thomason continued. That car refused to stop, and officers pursued it westbound toward Logan Avenue. The chase ended when the vehicle attempted to turn into an alleyway in the 600 block of Sheridan, struck a decorative rock, and the occupants fled on foot, Thomason said. Three subjects were then taken into custody in that area, he continued, including the driver of the vehicle. That person is being held on charges of aggravated fleeing and eluding, according to the release. Thomason added the name of the victim is not being released, pending notification by the Vermilion County Coroner's Office. No other persons were reported injured. Danville police were assisted during the initial response by the Vermilion County Sheriff's Department. Anyone with information on this crime is asked to contact Danville Police Detectives at 431-2250 or through Crime Stoppers at 446-TIPS. Crime Stoppers pays rewards up to $1,000 for information on felony crimes or fugitives. In the Vermilion County area, Crime Stoppers can be reached at 446-TIPS or an anonymous email left at vermilioncounty.crimestoppersweb.com. And the next article has the headline, Gulick's Petition Back Before Commission. Dateline Danville. The Danville Area Planning and Zoning Commission's April meeting ended before all action items were heard due to a commissioner having a previous commitment and leaving the meeting early. This left the commission without a quorum to finish acting on items, and the remaining petition was continued to the May meeting. The petition that was not acted upon has not been without controversy and will be heard Thursday by the committee. The zoning petition is for 914 North Vermilion Street, property that was the former Gulick's Ileana Medical Equipment and Supply Building. The request by the estate of John T. Gulick is for the property to be rezoned from P1 Professional to B3 General Business Zoning to allow for the parking lot at the location owned by the estate to be zoned the same as the building. Attorney Frank Young, representing the petitioner, said, "We don't have anything going at this point regarding future use of the property." But he added the chances of Stroud Liquors moving there is still a possibility. Young said all they want is to have the entire property zoned the same. "You can't use the parking lot if it's different than its actual use of B3, he said of the building. "If the zoning is not the same, the Gulick estate is out of luck and can't sell," Young said. A week after this meeting and prior to final Danville City Council action on the petition, expected on May 16th, if the petition moves forward, or a special meeting of the Zoning Commission has been scheduled for May 11th for the city to make changes in the Danville Zoning Ordinance. Zoning commissioners will consider changing the district use regulations to amend the table of uses to require a special use permit for packaged liquor stores in the B3 General Business Zoning District. The city's proposed action follows the Danville City Council earlier this month, not changing the distance from within 100 feet to within 1,000 feet in which a packaged liquor store can be located from a church or school. Several aldermen think the 1,000 feet is too prohibitive for business owners. It could limit relocations and the selling of liquor stores, and it skirts state law of 100 feet. Some also question the definition of a church and those entities renting retail space. This move would have prevented Stroud Liquors from moving into the Gulick site, according to city officials, based on the distance to Danville High School. In November, the Gulick rezoning request was withdrawn prior to the City Council Action Act. Mayor Scott Eisenhower also has previously postponed the vote after he felt the petitioner didn't understand the number of votes it would take for the rezoning request to pass. 10 alderman votes would have been needed to approve the rezoning request by the estate of John T. Gulick for the property at 912-914 North Vermilion Street to be rezoned from P1 to B3 general business. A supermajority vote of the council, or a two-thirds vote, was needed due to a conflict with the rezoning to the city's future land use plan, according to Eisenhower. City officials also then talked about restricting a liquor license at the location and how the city could require a special use permit for the sale of alcohol. Some aldermen were concerned about preventing the Gulick family from making a return on their investment. Eisenhower has said a business such as Gulick's that is allowed in professional and general business zoning could move in there tomorrow. A liquor store, however, requires a certain number of parking spaces, and it can't receive a certificate of occupancy without the rezoning. Nearby residents and business owners are concerned about potential crime, trash, increased traffic, and other problems with a liquor store there. The meeting on May 11th also will have for action a rezoning petition by James and Linda Baldwin to rezone 242 South Griffith Street in order to build a manufactured home. And the next article has the headline, College Express Students Display Projects, Dateline Danville. More than 300 high school students from all over Danville Area Community Colleges District who are enrolled in College Express showed off projects ranging from robots and homemade lava lamps to barbecue pork made on a grill designed and welded by students. DACC and Vermilion County Vocational Delivery System, that's VVEDS, marked its 10th year of presenting the College Express exhibition inside the Bremer Conference and Workforce Development Center on the DACC campus. We've had about 350 students here today, Nick Chatterton, director of VVEDS College Express, said Thursday during the event. One of the more popular displays at this year's event was the VEX robots from the Project Lead the Way program. The parts were in a kit, and it took 2 days to build and program the robot, explained Hoopston Area High School student Andrew Beckering, who is in the Project Lead the Way program. College Express students who weren't part of the Project Lead the Way program were encouraged to operate the robots using remote controls. Other students participated in robot races in which they maneuvered their robot to do tasks, such as pick up small items and pass them over a short wall to another robot. The displays are becoming more interactive, Chatterton said. The robots are a great example of a trending interest. The exhibition items on display Thursday were created by students in College Express's computer networking, computer programming, criminal justice, culinary arts, early childhood development, electronics, graphic design, construction, health occupations, horticulture, automotive repair, National Institute for Metalworking Skills, that's NIMS, Project Lead the Way, and Welding Industrial Tech programs. The event showcased the students' work either as individual or as group projects. The students who participated were from Armstrong Township, Bismarck Henning, Danville, Georgetown Ridge Farm, Hoopston Area, Milford, Oakwood, Salt Fork, and Westville High Schools, and Schlarman Academy. In keeping with a decade-long tradition, the graphic design students received awards. This year's winners were Andrew Aguirre, Danville High School, first place, Jenna Allison, Middle College, second place, and Lauren Winters, Westville High School, third place. Best of Show awards were given to two groups, the Graphic Design Program and Project Lead the Way. The Early Childhood Development Program had a large exhibit of child-friendly and scientifically based activities in the lobby of the Bremer Center. Abby Whitaker from Georgetown Ridge Farm High School created homemade lava lamps by adding Alka-Seltzer tablets to bottles filled with baby oil, water, and food coloring to make the liquid bubble. Nearby, Crystal Quint, another Georgetown Ridge Farm student, had her hands full as the elephant toothpaste she made by mixing yeast, hydrogen peroxide, dish soap, and food coloring kept bubbling over. The line was long to sample the barbecue pork sandwiches and homemade brownies being served by the College Express students in culinary arts. The pork was roasted on a large cooker smoker designed and created by the College Express welding students. Brianna Gonzalez from Hoopston Area High School and Atikse Musaj from Westville High School both said they enjoyed the College Express culinary arts program. "I learned new things and made crepes for the first time," Brianna said. "I always wanted to be a chef." "Those crepes were pretty cool," Atikse concurred. College Express is the career and technical dual-credit program for area high school juniors and seniors. Approximately 475 area high school students travel daily to the DACC campus for instruction in one of 14 career programs. The students receive both high school and college credit for the courses, and certificates can be earned in some of the programs. Most students who enter the program as a junior will graduate from high school with at least 12 college credit hours earned. The classes, books, and fees are free to the students, but their home high school students' districts pay reduced tuition and fees for each student enrolled in the program. In most cases, transportation to the college also is provided by their schools. And the next article has the headline, "Fundraiser to Help Veterans with PTSD, Donations of Auction Items Needed." Dateline Danville, in memory of two young men who lost their battle with PTSD, an event on May 6th will raise funds to help veterans with the disorder. Working Out PTSD will start at 6 p.m. Saturday, May 6th, at American Legion Post 210 on Jackson and Prospect Streets. The event will feature music, food, a 50-50 drawing, and silent auction. The fundraiser is in memory of Marine Sergeant Aaron Merrill, the son of Jenny Lou Merrill of Bismarck and David Merrill of Danville, and Marine Lance Corporal Tyler Lee Wilson, son of Julia and David Wilson of Danville. Aaron died on July 4th, 2015, at age 26, and Tyler was 29 when he died June 8th, 2016, in Covington, Indiana. Admission to the event is free, but donations will be taken for a foundation that will help pay gym or fitness fees for veterans coping with post-traumatic stress disorder. There also will be a small charge for a barbecue meal. Donations of items, such as gift certificates for the silent auction, are needed. Organizer Jenny Lou Merrill, a member of the American Legion Riders and American Legion Post 210, said she has a football photographed by Peyton Manning, which will be auctioned, and other items are needed. A veteran also has been asked to demonstrate the skills of his service dog. The Indiana country western band, the Cornfield Mafia, will perform a song it wrote, "This Soldier's Pain," which can be seen on YouTube and on the group's website, www.cornfieldmafia.com. There also will be a video honoring young Merrill and Wilson. Merrill said about 25 motorcycles from the Brownsburg, Indiana American Legion riders will come in for the event. Merrill, a Navy veteran, came up with the idea to help service people release their stress through exercise. Donations will help pay for membership or subscription fees for gyms and other fitness-related activities. Some of the gyms in town are working with Merrill to offer special rates. Often, veterans returning home don't have a job or enough money to pay for gym memberships. She felt that her son felt good when he was working out. In the military, the young people are put through drills and training, and so working out feels natural to them. Also, she said, working out produces good hormones. Julia Wilson, who's helping Merrill with the fundraiser, said of the event, "I just think it's fantastic." She and Merrill bonded during Wreaths Across America when both placed a wreath in honor of PTSD victims. The young men knew each other. After Tyler's death, people would tell her, "We need to do more for our veterans." Once they get home, they fail because they aren't given the tools to become regular citizens again, she said. "That's where the struggle begins," she said. Wilson agreed that exercise is something that people in the military are used to, and after the service they can have that camaraderie by working out together. She recalled that Tyler always enjoyed working out and running on a daily basis. When he stopped, that was a sign that something was wrong. Merrill said she hopes this effort, working on PTSD, will reach a lot of veterans, adding, "I think it will be very useful. Also, she and others can check to make sure the veterans are using their gym memberships and whether they're doing okay. The group can provide information and resources to help those who might need an extra boost." Once the fund is set up, Merrill said there will be applications available on the American Legion Writers website, and veterans can apply through the Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System. American Legion Writers also will sponsor a car and bike show on May 20th at the American Legion Post 210. And now we go to the obituaries. And the first is for Eric A. Barkman Danville, who died peacefully in his home April 24th, 2017. A celebration of Eric's life will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, April 28th, right now when I'm talking to you, at Crossroads Christian Church in Danville. Visitation was this morning from 10 to 11 a.m. at the church. Burial is following the service in Spring Hill Cemetery. Memorial donations can be made to Hospice Hearts Pet Rescue. And the next is for Gary Neal. Gary Neal, 61, of Hoopston, died at 6:35 a.m. Wednesday, April 26th at Carl Hoopston Regional Health Center. Funeral services will be at noon Monday at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street, Hoopston, with Sam Terrell officiating. Burial will be in Floral Hill Cemetery, Hoopston. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to noon Monday at the funeral home. And the next is for George A. Johnson, 65, of Danville, who died at 11:13 a.m. Wednesday, April 26th, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leek and Son Funeral Home, 304 East William Street, Danville. And the next is for Howard Robinson. A visitation for Howard Robinson, 86, formerly of Hoopston and Rankin, who died on Friday, November 11th at Franklin Grove Funeral Home in Franklin Grove, will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. Saturday, April 29th at the Hoopston United Methodist Church, 403 East Main Street, Hoopston. A memorial service will follow the visitation at 11 a.m. at the church, with Pastor Kathy Naaman officiating. And the next is for Christina Sue Tina Howlett, who died on April 25th at home. A celebration of life will be held today, Friday, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center. Jan Reeder officiated. Visitation was from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. today at the funeral home. Burial will be at Georgetown Cemetery. Memorials may be made in Tina's name to Farmers Chapel United Methodist Church. And the next is for Mary Lee Miller, 61, of Danville, who died at 8:43 p.m. on April 25th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A celebration of life service will be held at 2 p.m. tomorrow, that's Saturday, April the 29th, 2017, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Officiating will be Jim Russell. Burial will be at Hopewell Cemetery in Gessie, Indiana. Visitation will be held Friday, that's today, April the 28th, from 4 to 8 p.m. at the funeral home. Memorial donations may be made in Mary's name to Schultz House Activities Fund, 340 Bryan Avenue, Danville, Illinois, 61832. And the next is for William B. Carter, son of the late Edward T. and Lucille Foster Carter, who died April 24th at Mason Point in Sullivan, Illinois, after a brief illness. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. tomorrow morning, Saturday, April 29th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center, 3940 North Vermilion Street, Danville, with a celebration of life service at 11 a.m. Saturday. Burial will be at Sunset Memorial Park. Reverend Michael Heidlow will be officiating. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Emmanuel Lutheran Church. And the next is for Eric Miles Sr., who died on April 24th at Carroll Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A celebration of life will commence at noon tomorrow, April 29th, at Antioch Missionary Baptist Church, 311 North Collett Street, Danville. Visitation will begin at 11 a.m. until the start of the service. Officiating will be the Reverend Lucius Barber. Leacon Sons Funeral Home in Danville is in charge of arrangements. And now an article with the headline, Covington to Offer Tours. Dateline Covington. A chance to see Covington by horse and wagon will be offered from noon to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, May 6th. The Historic District Architectural Tour will be presented by the Fountain County Art Council and sponsored in part by local real estate agents. Tickets are available day of tour only. Also that day, there will be the season's opening of the Fountain County Clerk's Building Museum with demonstrations and refreshments at 516 4th Street. The Fountain County Courthouse will have two narrated tours of the Eugene Savage murals at 1 and 3 p.m. Cost of the architectural tour by wagon, home tour, and booklet is $15. Tour by wagon and booklet is $10. Tour of select homes only $8 and booklet only $5. Cost for children younger than 12 accompanied by adults is $7 with no booklet. For additional information, call 765-793-2710. And the next article has the headline, Hoopston Area Board Elects Officers. Dateline, Hoopston. Hoopston Area School Board members had a special meeting Wednesday to swear in newly elected members and select officers. Craig Lee and Debbie Klaber took their seats, replacing Russell Walder, who did not seek re-election, and Dave McFadden. Mark Schomburg was elected unanimously as the board president, Chris Small as the vice president, and Chris Elliott as the board secretary. Schaum and Elliott have been board members since 2007, while Small has served since 2011. In other school board business, members approved the bylaws, meeting schedule, and financial depositories. The board secretary's salary was set at $250 a year. The next Hoopston Area School Board meeting will be at 6:30 p.m. May 18th at the high school library. And the next is a column from the Pantograph in Bloomington with the headline, Illinois has too many units of local government. During the recent election cycle, most of the attention was paid to high-profile, locally contested races for mayors, city councils, and school boards. But there were dozens of other uncontested contests for local governmental units, such as ambulance, drainage, and fire protection districts. That, once again, highlight just how many layers of local government we have in Illinois. As we have reported before, Illinois has around 7,000 units of local government. A lot of taxpayer dollars could be saved if we reduce that number, a conclusion that, not surprisingly, has been reached by Lieutenant Governor Evelyn Sanguinetti, who more than 2 years ago was appointed by Governor Bruce Rauner to study the situation. Now it's time for the General Assembly to act on it. The consolidation of many of these small units of government and sharing of services would accomplish another Rauner objective that we agree with, property tax relief, a goal he emphasized repeatedly during his January State of the State address, citing Sanguinetti's report. The huge number of local government is in part why Illinois pays the second highest median tax rate in the country. Most of the reduction in these units can be realized by doing away with redundancy, overlap, and duplicate administrative costs. To her credit, Sanguinetti found that some local government bodies do a good job of sharing services, reducing burdensome state mandates and relieving the tax burden on taxpayers. Her report defined shared services as voluntary arrangements between two or more governments to provide more efficient and effective services that help program recipients and taxpayers. Her report cites 27 specific examples collected through a survey distributed by local government associations across the state. For taxpayers struggling with ever-increasing property tax bills and service fee hikes, water, sewer, etc., the issue needs to be addressed. That's not something most lawmakers want to do, because these units of government have been around for decades, and the people who run them think they are necessary. Not many people are willing to give up something they've always had. Plus, these are the kinds of folks who vote. But again, consider that Illinois' number of governmental units is first in the nation by far. It includes an estimated 3,200 plus special districts that include, among others, obscure bodies like mosquito abatement districts. The overall system is so confusing, experts disagree on just how many units of local government exist in the state. There is little oversight on many of them, and the system is so vast that taxpayers cannot keep track. The number of local governmental units is unmanageable to ensure open and fair government, and the taxpayer burden is unsustainable. Streamlining government is one way Illinois can return to being competitive in an increasingly competitive regional, national, and global economy. We'll keep repeating that we expect our lawmakers in Springfield to take on the issues that need to be addressed. This is another one. And now another column with the headline, Illinois is heading for financial disaster fast. And this one comes from the Freeport Journal-Standard. We look with alarm at the repeated warnings from financial rating agencies about our state's sliding credit rating. At the end of March, Moody's Investor Service issued another such warning that said if Illinois doesn't pass a budget by May 31st, the end of the legislative session, the state will face unsustainable fiscal challenges and risk long-term damage to universities and social service providers because of unpaid bills. May 31st is a little over a month away, the so-called grand bargain in the state Senate to raise taxes and cut spending has broken down, and the House is in no mood to pass a budget with any reforms that Governor Bruce Rauner wants passed. Worse, we have not detected a sense of urgency from legislators to take action. The last time our state had a budget was June 30th, 2015. That's nearly 2 years ago. With a growing backlog of unpaid bills and the nation's worst unfunded pension liability, Illinois is in real trouble. Social service agencies are going out of business. Community colleges and state universities are cutting staff, classes, and are losing students galore. People are leaving the state, and nobody does anything about it. We're truly in a sorry state. This has been Lois Pausch reading the news for Friday, April 28th. I look forward to reading with you again soon.